Brooks played the game.
Love Talk Radio.
Hangman Brooks. Now let's talk football because he's keeping it real with Hangman Brooks. Who lurks in the hearts of men? Hangman Brooks, rough and rugged, he be giving it raw. Yeah, Hangman Brooks.
Welcome, 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 welcome. Hey, what's going on, Brooks? Can you hear
welcome,
me?
Welcome, welcome, welcome to everybody in Radio Land. We got a late start, but everything is a go. We all right. Got my man Bach handling his business, hitting his sticking like Popeye Chicken. What's up, Big Bach?
Ain't nothing, man. Hanging in there. How you doing?
Man, I ain't going to throw rice at a Chinese wedding, but other than that, I'm all right.
That's what I like to hear, man. That's what I like to hear. They done changed me around a little bit, so I'm trying to...
Yeah, I know.
From a longer distance.
I know. Yeah, we can make some adjustments.
Definitely, definitely, man.
Make some adjustments.
You got a great show, man.
There's no question. I got a great show tonight, man. And my man Bach, we're going to have some fun. We got my man Yango Sawyer. Yango Elwood is dealing with prison reform, you know, a former inmate. He's working in the community. He's doing a lot to try to help young people. I mean, we're trying to get, you know, people back to work when they come out of prison, which is very important.
Definitely.
He's involved with a lot of different organizations. And well-respected, right? He's well-respected. You know, it's only a few people that I can really say out in the streets. Al-Malik Farrakhan is one personal friend of mine. We're going to have him on. You know, Alliance of Concerned Men, Rico, and Rico Rush, and Tyrone Parker. Then Louis Cardona, he used to deal with the Hispanic group. So we got a few people that's going to make a big difference. Now, today, we're going to get away from the football. Like I said, we're going to have a lot of different guests. We got my man, Keno Wilson. Keno Wilson, personal friend of mine. We go back maybe 25 years. Hell of a basketball player at McKinley. Went on to Central State, basketball player. Head coach at H.D. Woodson High School basketball team. Head coach at Oxon Hill right now. Plus, he did some coaching along the way. And well-respected in D.C., you know, both guys are straight out of D.C. So, Keno, we call him Kip. I call him Keno the dog. He's going to why they name him Keno? Keno, and then he got Kip in there. Kip, K-I-P. I said he could have named himself Kit so he could be like that Carl Knight Rider. But this guy, these two guys are real straight up D.C. guys. And they're going to have some interesting things to talk about. One thing about us, Bob, you know, we try to get people that's got a journey and got stories that impact people's lives and themselves around the DMV.
Oh, yeah. That's what we're about.
Yeah. So how you doing? How your daughter? Everything all right?
Yeah, everybody doing good. Everybody well, man. You know, just you're dealing with life, you know. You know, a lot of times people don't know what goes on and what it takes to, you know, continue on your journey on whatever it is that you're doing, but it takes a lot of, you know, dedication, you know, humility.
And, a lot of bumps.
Yeah. Just knowing that, you know, you might ride over a hard bump, but you know another one might come. So now you just slow down a little bit and prepare yourself for it. So that's
well,
where I'm
you
at.
You know what I always say, if you're nervous, join the church service. If you're scared, stay in bed.
Oh, man.
Speaking of church, I'm going to church tomorrow, Bob.
Oh, yeah?
I'm going to church tomorrow.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
I talked to my pastor, so I'll be at church tomorrow. I know people can be looking at me, where has he been? But you know, those Sundays, I've been working them Sundays for the last 8 months. So you know how that is.
Oh, man, but you know what? Well, at least you ain't been scared. We know that. At least you know you ain't been scared. No, but
Man, you hit me with that. You never join the church every week. Hey, I ain't gonna stay in bed. I'm gonna go to church. I gotta, you know, give thanks to the Almighty up top. You know, I gotta give Him thanks, man. Without Him, we wouldn't even be here. So,
hey, that's the truth, man.
Hey, guess what?
What's that?
Did you see the playoffs? Golden State, they crushed Houston first round.
Oh man,
was crazy. Crushing the president, beat him by about 30 points.
Yeah, that was crazy. They put the work. Yeah, playoff season is going down.
Yeah.
Toronto and Indiana 1-1. Man, that game was crazy. I mean, Harden only had 17 points.
He was off. They played defense. They played defense on him. He only did 78 points, and they the fourth leading scoring team in the NBA, right? So they stop on them. I'm waiting for my Boston Celtics. You know, I know they ain't gonna go that far. Cleveland probably get it, but Boston is my team, and San Antonio. I love San Antonio, and I tell people, they say, "Well, you think they're gonna beat Golden State? You think they win the championship?" I say the same thing I said about the Patriots. As long as you're in the hunt, because if you're in the hunt, yeah, you can lose, you can win, but you got to be in the hunt. You got to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're in the playoffs, anything can happen.
Yeah, they got 30 points from behind the 3-point line on them last night.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. They was cranking them up. Steph Curry, they tried to rough him up a little bit, but they got into a little thing. But these ball players, man, they're not the same back in the day when they really would hurt you. You know, Detroit Pistons, Lambeer, you go to the hoop, they can take your head off, right? And Boston Celtics, three monsters up front with Bird, Parrish, and McHale, you know, 7 feet, 6'11", and 6'10", you know, and they bang too. So these players are going to be interesting. They're going to be very interesting, you know.
You know what really killed the Rockets the most, though? They had 24 turnovers. I mean,
they did have 24 turnovers.
The game,
I listened to the game. They were, you know, Golden State was all over the place. You know, trapping, stealing the ball. I mean, they were charged up. They were ready for this playoff run. And you know, Houston, if Harden don't score, they seem like they don't do well, right? And speaking of that. The reason why I'm not crazy about NBA basketball, I like the team concept. I don't like that one man is carrying the team. Just why I like the reason why I like San Antonio, because San Antonio, man, they got a lot of people that contribute, and it's a team concept. And they've been winning for 15, 20 years with that team concept. With most teams now is one-on-one. When it's crunch time, everybody move out the way and let him do his thing. But people don't realize the great teams with Jordan. He had Scottie Pippen in the Hall of Fame. He had Dennis Rodman in the Hall of Fame. You know, Detroit Pistons, Dumas and Isaiah Thomas Hall of Fame. So was Dennis Rodman. You know, Lakers, they had Magic Johnson, but they also had Kareem Jabbar, Kobe Bryant. He also had the big boy, you know. He had Shaquille O'Neal. So if you look at all those great teams, they did, a lot of them had two Hall of Famers. So when you look at LeBron, he won championships in Miami with Wade, which is the Hall of Famer. But I don't care how good you are. You know, every team needs at least two Hall of Famers to be a dynasty. Now, you can win, to be noted. If you notice all the great teams, they had at least two Hall of Famers.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Yeah. It's a team game. I don't care how you look at it. It's a team game, you know. And one thing about Golden State, they got Steph Curry, but they got a whole lot of people that can score.
Mm-hmm.
They got a whole lot of people that can score from anywhere. And if I had a team and we had to play against them, I tell my guys to play physical. But if you don't have physical-type guys to do it, you know, Leopard ain't going to change his spot. They ain't gonna change the spot. If you don't have those kind of gorillas on the team, I call them gorillas.
Go ahead.
You know.
Oh my.
So.
Yeah, The Capitals, they won on Thursday, starting the series off.
I hope they win it all. I really do. You know, I've always liked the Capitals. New York Islanders is my team, but I love the Capitals, and I think they deserve it. They're the best team in hockey. They got the best goalie right now. You know, I think, and I hope and pray that they win everything.
Yeah.
They put a team together.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So
that's it did. Team full of superstars, man, you know.
Yeah, man, and the special teams was what killed them on the last game. Special teams came for those 2 points for them, so that was good, man. They're kicking butt now to keep up the good work.
They rolling too. Hopper hit a grand slam for his 100th home run. Look at a grand slam for his 100th home run. But you know what? That man like he's 50 years old. I ain't never seen no young man look that old.
Hey, that's
he's
true.
He's old looking, 22 years old, huh? But he can play.
Yeah, he sure enough can, man. He killed it, man. Like that was amazing, man. When I heard about
the 100 home runs was a grand slam.
Yeah, they at the top
100
of the fourth.
Home runs already, huh? Yeah.
Top of the fourth right now, and they up 3 on Philadelphia right now as we speak.
And Dusty Baker's gonna make a difference, coach, that team. He's a no nonsense. He's a funny dude too.
Oh yeah.
Going over top of him, he's a great manager.
Yeah, they demolished them, man.
Yeah.
It was 9-1.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is the best start for the Nationals in the history of the team.
Yeah, I hope they do well, man. I love the Yankees. I've always loved the Yankees, but I like the Nationals. I really do. I mean, I love the Nationals, and I hope they do well. And I didn't catch a game last year, but I'm going to catch a game this year, so. You know, baseball was my first love before I even thought about football. But I found out I was a better football player than baseball player, so that it dropped the bomb on that.
Yeah, what position did you play? What position did you play on?
Outfield.
Okay.
Yeah, I played outfield.
You got a caller. Let's talk to him. We got a caller for you.
Yeah, but we got Kip coming on at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. You live with the Hangman. Killer head, the body or die.
Can you talk to
me? How you doing, sir?
Good.
Hey, hi, how are you?
Hello?
Just listening? All right, I guess they just listening. Call us 5163.
Okay.
5163.
Hello?
Hello? Hey,
come on, Miles. Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Doing great.
Let's talk football with the Hangman.
Right. Tell the Hangman this is Charlotte, North Carolina, checking in with us.
How you doing?
We doing.
How's your grandson?
I'm trying to get him to come to the phone, but he in there looking at that, on that video game because I wanted him to get some pointers from you guys.
Okay. Awesome. Look, call us back because we got a special guest coming on, but just when you get away from the video game, have him call me. I'll give a few words of wisdom.
Uh-huh. All right,
you
could
thank
just
you.
Keep listening. Yeah, you could keep listening. All right. You have to call in. Woo, that was nice, man. They calling him from all over the country, huh?
Yeah.
I see you, Brooke. I see you. Man, appreciate you, man. So we got your boy Kino coming on with us.
That's my main man.
That's your main man, huh, man?
I gotta watch him because he'll tell a lie about me.
Uh-oh, you know I'm going to find out.
Yeah, I know.
I got to know the truth. I got to know the truth. I'm tired of being in the dark about this.
It's something else. It don't have nothing to do with being a dirty...
Hello.
You're now live with the Hangman. Let's talk football.
Hey, Bob. I'm gonna tell you about Kino. Kino, that's my man. We like 30 year friends. He I was at Kelly Miller. He was working there. Track coach, doing a little bit of everything, basketball. I mean, a person I really respected. You know, great ball player, McKinley High School. Played at Central State, played basketball. Coached H.D. Woodson. Took him to the playoffs, right? Good coach, H.D. Woodson. I think he had a stop along the way. Coach, he'll tell us. But then, now he's at Oxford Hill. He's the basketball coach. He turned that program around. But this man is really about helping young people. We've seen a lot of our students go to jail, a lot of them succeed. But this guy, man, we worked together at Kelly Miller Junior High School, and we worked together. I mean, and we did a great job. I even had to get on him. We played a faculty game one time, and guess what? He out there playing around. I said, if them kids beat us in a faculty game, I said, we ain't going to be walking down the hall. I said, you need to get busy. He got busy and lit them young boys up. But, Keno, glad to have you on the show, man.
Thanks. Thanks. Glad to be here. Glad to be here.
My hey, man.
Oh, man. You already know the Hangman. Don't tell me you played with him.
Actually, I met. It was ironic. As I my first teaching job, I had a choice to pick between Kelly Miller Junior High School and Deal, and I knew nothing about Deal, so I chose Kelly Miller. And when I got there, it was rough in those days. Actually, I'm teaching school now at McKinley, and I tell them how times have changed with metal detectors, and how we had at one point when we were at Kelly Miller, we had gun check once a month. And Theophilus, Mr. Coach Brooks was one of the vetted guys at the school, who was the much respected guy. He took me on his wing and looked out for me. So that's how he looked out for me, kept me out of trouble. So that's how I know him, and always has always looked out for me and respected me, and I have always respected him.
Nice.
Hey Bob, he said I took him on his wing. He tried to make people think he was soft when he got there. He was thorough when he got to that school. He wasn't soft. I knew he was going to say that. That's not true. We looked out for each other. But, man, we're glad to have you on the show, man. I knew we were going to get you on the show. But, look, man, you're from D.C., right? I want to make sure you from D.C. You ain't from Pamunkey, Maryland or somewhere. Are you from D.C., right?
I'm from Washington, D.C., third generation.
I got to make sure, because a lot of phantom guys be screaming, say, yeah, I was born in Alabama, but I was raised in Washington. I just want to make sure that my man was legit. So, look, tell us, because you're a hell of a basketball player, but tell us how you got started. Tell us about your coaching. And we're going to chime in. We're going to ask you a few things. But we want to know your journey, man.
Coaching, as far as the coaching portion, well, the playing portion is we grew up eight people in one bedroom. And my dad came home one day. My dad worked three jobs. And he came one day a little frustrated, gave me a basketball, and said if I took this basketball and made it work for me, then my life would forever change. So I wound up getting played basketball at McKinley Tech, went on to play at Central State University, Black College All-American, did pretty well there, went on to play a little bit with overseas. I played with in Australia, I played in Germany, played with the Clippers for a little bit, and I got into coaching through a guy, a mutual friend of ours, Richard Wells. Most people know him as Dickie Wells. Dickie Wells told me one day that he had never had an assistant coach, but he wanted me to be his assistant. And I was his assistant for 1 year. And I took over the program for him, and I went to back-to-back championships at Kelly Miller then.
Absolutely.
I won two tennis championships there. I won seven track championships. And then while coaching, I got an offer to coach at Spingarn. And Dickie Wells made me go to Spingarn and take over that job. I coached there 5 years, then went to Woodson for 15. Actually, Brooks said I went to the playoffs, but I went to – actually, I guess a bad thing is I lost four championships at Woodson.
You went to four championships.
Yeah, I lost four at Woodson, and I lost one at Spingarn.
Hey, look, let me tell you something. I went to 2 championships. I went to the playoffs 10 times when I coached Calamelo girls. Went to 2 championships twice and lost both of them. But it ain't no shame in that game because it's about production, about raising the program, and it's about helping young people.
Yes, that's true. That is true.
Yeah.
That's true.
So you coached at Spingarn for 5 years, but you had some good teams there, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I had we went my first year we went 16-12. My second year 22-5. My third year championship team was 30-2. The fourth year was 30-4. And then last year was 25-5. My coach, 2 McDonald's All Americans, Will Smith and Fred Primus. I
Yo, Will.
Baby Shaq who plays for the And-1 team.
Yeah.
Bernard Robson who played with the Bobcats. Charlotte Bobcats. So we had 4 great players there.
Yeah. Will was my man. Will's my man. What's the big guy you had? I forgot his name. He got hurt.
That was H.D. Wilson. But the big kid I had at Spingarn was a kid named, they called him Tater Bug, but his name was Devontae Wallace from Kennewick.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
But the kid I had at H.D. Wilson was Antoine Miller, who went to play at Stephen F. Austin. He was 6'6", 240. He tore his ACL in a championship game. We was up 15. And after that, Spingarn slow walked us because my tallest guy after that was 6'2". They kind of beat us up on the backboard.
Yeah, well, let me tell you something. You put your work in. That's coaching, man. Because, you know, you got to remember when you went to these programs, they weren't doing so hot. And that means a lot, man. You know, that means a lot.
Yeah.
I never won a championship. But guess what? It's about the body of work that you put in, right? It's about the body of work. You went to the championship. A lot of people don't go to the championship. A lot of people don't succeed. You had a lot of ball players. You had everybody respected you. I've never known any players to disrespect you because of your demeanor and your character. I mean, matter of fact, I don't know anybody to dislike you because of the way you carry yourself. and you played with a lot of pros. And you've been around a lot of pros. I remember Walt Williams used to play with Maryland, played in the NBA. He came over to see my man, you know, so well respected. Now, what happened at Winston? I know you went to the playoffs or championship. How many years did you coach up with Winston?
14. Actually, it was 13, but it's funny because I was tricked by a kid from – I always say a kid from Clay Terrace. His nickname – I can't remember his real name. I can't remember his real name, but they called him Ditta. But Ditta tricked me into coaching the girls' JV. The reason I stopped coaching was in 2005. My mom and my 2 sisters all passed away with cancer.
Oh, my God. I remember.
I had to take care of my mom because she was in hospice and she wasn't doing well. So I had to be her caregiver. So I had to just step away from basketball for a minute. And then his name was Darius, and Darius taught me in the coaching the girls JV, and we wound up going for 2 years. We went 19-0. So I did win a championship, but it wasn't on the varsity level. I won it 2 years in a row. And,
but you were always a winner.
The show for it.
But you were a winner, man. That's the key.
And you know, and Brooks, you know the greatest thing. That team, which is ironic, the team that I had at the girls I had at H.D. Woodson, 3 of them. Now that I'm at McKinley, 3 of them coach with me. 1 helps out with the girls basketball, and 2 of them help me out with tennis and golf.
Man, see, that's a lot of
me. And to me, that's winning championships, when you get your former students. And I have another student that played tennis for me when I was at Coolidge. He's coaching with me, and he's a firefighter. So those are my championships. Those are the things that make me feel like feel great. And like you said, I got maybe 5 or 10 kids that once a year they just pop in my classroom and say to my kids, this is my coach, and they explain how their journey and how our journey have been attached to each other.
Well, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. You know, about the championship thing, and I've said this a lot of times. I've won some championships, but I was telling Miller, I lost. I had real teams that were great. I lost two championships. I won a championship twice, lost twice. The first year they had baseball in junior high school, I took to the championship, right? Because we had all them guys from Lincoln Heights. They've been playing rec ball. So I coached at the rec and with Sonny Hicks, and I coached in the school. So we went to the championship against Langley, and we lost the championship. But I look at it like at Kellen Miller, I never won a championship, but I was always in the playoffs. I was always in the thick of it. And a lot of them girls, they went on to do great things. I had two of my girls were starting for A.C. Woodson in 85 when Bob Henry had the number one team in the country, Ruthie and Lisa. So, I mean, when you look at it and say, man, I ain't winning a championship. Man, look at all the lives you touched. You had a winning program. See, that's the key. Do you have a winning program? Are they technically sound? You know, do they turn out to be good people?
Yeah.
And I can really see that, right? And you can say it too.
Yeah.
A lot of athletes, Kevin Miller, there's a lot of drama there too, but we weeded all that stuff out. And I think you did a great job, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. That's right.
Yeah. Well, tell us about when you played college ball up Central State.
Well, it was a little different. I initially know you know that Elgin Bell is my uncle. So I went to Seattle.
Everybody, Elgin Bell is his uncle. The great Elgin Bell, the Hall of Fame played with the Lakers.
So I initially went to school in Seattle, in Washington. I went to a junior college first in Wenatchee, Washington, where I averaged like 35 points a game. I then went on to play at Seattle, but I just got homesick. Came home. I was playing, it's funny, I was playing a dude named John Bowie, who worked at Maryland University, used to open his gym in Hinesville. And I wound up playing basketball there one day. And I always tell a story, it's funny because I tell my students about honoring your word. So we had played basketball. This is when everybody used to take, like, their best five to go play basketball. So we had beat Cliff. I don't know if you remember Clifton Cotton. Clifton Cotton had a five that was supposed to have been beating everybody in D.C. So we kind of played them. We beat them. But there was a dude named Warren Matthews that Cotton said wasn't there that day. So we came back the next week to play them to prove that we were better than them. But I was sick. So a friend of mine kept calling my phone. And my mom came in my bedroom and said, look, if you told them you was going to be there, you need to get up and go there. So at the time, I remember they had – Highs. So I went to Highs, got me a ginger ale, got on the bus, and I went down to the gym in Hinesville. And after we finished playing, we wound up beating Clifton Cotton. And when I came off the court, the coach at Central State said to me, what college did I go to? I told him I didn't. He said, well, you do now. You coming to me at Central State. Darryl Brooks, basketball coach at Central State. He's the head coach at Bowie State University now.
Okay. I mean, he just, you went to that game and he just picked you up and said, you going to Central State to play basketball?
Yep. Took me to the library, Woodridge Library. Billy Joe, who was the coach at Central State at the time, football team and athletic director, faxed me a letter of intent. I signed it. My dad signed it. And that's how I got to Central State.
But he already knew you from McKinley and from
He didn't.
College.
He knew me in that gym. That's how I got that job. I got a scholarship playing basketball in that gym.
What?
Yeah.
I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah.
And so when you went to Central State, how was that? You had my man Henderson Mosley and that crew up there. There's a lot of great football players up there.
Central State was really a football school. We had some great teams.
Yeah.
We had some real good teams. We competed real good. It was really a football school. I think at the time, Central State football team had gone 5 years losing maybe 2-3 games.
Yeah, that's right.
Three national championships. So we really couldn't compete with them. But they all came to all our games. They supported us. And like I say, I wound up being Black College All-American and had some great years there.
The best place, you know, Central State was the best place I've ever been in my life.
Well, let me ask you, you play the shooting guard up there?
Point guard. I play point guard there. Yes. Actually, I guess when I started playing, I was a combo guard before they called it a combo guard.
Combo,
so
yeah.
I played the one, and then I moved over to the two when the other guy came in the game.
What was y'all record? Did y'all win a lot or what?
We had some great seasons. We went to the sectionals 1 year, loss. We went to the Final Four and loss 1 year. We went 22-7 1 year. We went 18-6 1 year. And then my freshman year we went 12-12. We went 500 my freshman year. Then my senior year we lost in the Final Four. We finished 29-7.
So that means in all your life you've been around decent programs, either coaching or playing, and that's remarkable. And Central State was a powerhouse football team, and a lot of guys from D.C. were there. But you know, it's amazing that you went to a school and wasn't noted for basketball, but you made a difference up there. I mean, your name blew up. Everybody knew who you were, and that's what it's all about. I don't care if you're Timbuktu. If you're playing, if you're getting your man, as they say, if you're handling your man, you know, you're gonna get notoriety. I tell people that all the time. But a lot of people, you know, a lot of people say, I'm all American. I always make a comment, we all Americans. I'm American, too. Box, American, right? We all Americans. But seriously, so when you left there, did any NBA teams, who looked at you?
I went, like I said, you know, Elgin was my uncle, so I got some looks with the Clippers. And I went to a camp in Italy, actually, and it was an NBA-funded program, and I got invited to two camps, but I wound up with the Clippers going to that camp.
Okay. So what was your journey like there at the Clippers?
I mean, it was short. I mean, it was a great opportunity to be around guys like Lloyd Vaught, Doc Rivers and those guys, and Larry Johnson and Mike Jones, some of the guys I remember. It was good to just be around those guys to learn the game.
Yeah, some people don't get that opportunity, so it means something, you know.
Yeah.
So when you left the Clippers, then what was your...
I left it, and I went overseas. That's when I went to Perth. I played 8 months in Perth, and then my knees was bothering me so much. And then that's when I decided I had to make a decision. But did I decide to stick with it, keep fighting through these knees, or go ahead and give me an education? So I didn't want to come home. It's funny because I didn't want to come home to D.C. because I was embarrassed about being cut. So I went to Atlanta. So I was in Atlanta for about 6 months till I saw how much they was paying. So I said, you know what, let me go home, suck it up. And that's how I got to Keller Miller.
Okay. Yeah, back then, man, people tell me I feel embarrassed getting cut. But they don't realize, you know, being in a camp, you know how many people get to be in a camp? It's unbelievable. You know, it's not like anybody can just walk in a camp and just go and play ball and say, well, I'm here. I mean, you got to be invited. I mean, you got to have some talent. You know, I tell people, you got NBA or football players, if you got 90 football players trying out for a team, and they only keep 45 or 50, does that mean the other 40 are bums? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You can't keep everybody, right? So, you know, the point is, how many people you know get that chance that you got to be with an NBA team? You know, so you got to have talent. You got to look at yourself as, you know, I got talent.
Yeah.
Plus, you went overseas, and anytime you get paid for something, you're a pro.
Yeah.
No, what it is, right? So, you start having knee problems, right? That's when you decide to give it up?
Yeah. My knees are just – I've had knee problems for years. But, you know, back in the day, you got ice your knees down and you kept playing.
Yeah.
Took an ice bath and you kept moving on. But when you play at the next level, I always tell people the biggest difference in playing at the next level is –
The greatest thing when I played overseas, they only played once a week. You practice a couple of days, it was laid back. You played once a week, and that was it. Well, when
what?
You played that, you playing in the NBA, it's three practices. It's a practice in the morning, it's practice in the evening, it's practice at night. It's a lot of wear and tear on your body. And that's why a lot of people on the outside looking in don't know how much an athlete in the NBA go through. And you playing on that hardwood, and you up and down, and you running, and you working hard. It's bad on that body. You can beat your body. That's why you see just as many NBA players with bad knees and bad backs walking up down in the streets than you see in football.
Yeah, you know what? I'm glad you said that. You're absolutely right. Because when you pounding up and down on that floor in the summertime, you're on that concrete. When you pounding, that's bad on your knees. You know, I tell people all the time, you know, playing those sports and playing for a long period of time, it's a wear and tear in your body. There's a lot of things you can do to try to help yourself, but you know, when you just pounding, and that college start deteriorating, or you know, playing football, I tell people all the time, when you play football on the level I played in, it's many car accidents. You hit somebody, every time you hit somebody, that's like accident. That's not boys club, right? You hitting it, and as you get older, your body feel it. Now, as you got older, do you feel it, some of those injuries?
Man, yes. I can tell you when it's going to rain.
You absolutely right, man. You know, when you first,
Brooks, to say that, and that's the only regret. And when I go into the gym and teach these kids, it's not a thought regret. But I wish I could play with these kids because, you know, my weight is good. I look like I'm in shape, but I can't get out there and play, demonstrate like I used to. I tried to demonstrate a drill with the kids one time, and then my knee swole up like a bowling ball. And I wasn't doing nothing. I just did three or four drills, and then I woke up the next morning, my knee was holding. That's the only regret I have, is I wish I could have saved my body enough to go out and jog in a 5K, show a kid a drill, play tennis with the kids, do a line dance with the kids while I'm demonstrating sports. That's the only regret I have, is I wish at 47 years of age that I could do some demonstrations with my students.
But the thing about it is, you play ball a long time. It's the wear and tear on your body. You know, some things you could better yourself, and you wouldn't have the problems. But the wear and tear, and you played a long time. See, it wasn't just like you played high school ball, you stop, or you played college ball, you stop. I mean, you played pro ball, you played overseas, and the human body is not made for this kind of stuff. It's not made for it. The human body is not made for jumping up and down on a full floor. It's not made for it. So it's the same thing with me. You know, when I coached friendship last year, I could get down and show a guy about how to come off the ball. But once I show him how to come off the ball, that's where everything stops. Because I can't run. Can't do anything. I've had 8 operations. So. I know how it is, but one thing about it, I tell people all the time, and I'm going to ask you, the journey that you had playing ball, would you trade it? Would you do it all over again?
Oh, man. I tell my kids that, and that's a great question. Man, an outstanding question. I tell my kids that sports, without sports, I don't know where I would be. The friendships I made. I mean, I traveled this country, and I got some of all of my former teammates, we all call out each other's kids uncle. They call me uncle. My kids call them uncle. We a friend of mine I hadn't seen, he came to D.C. I hadn't seen him in years. He had some issues. He came down to see me. I told him, come on down. I hadn't seen him in 20 years, and we picked up like it was yesterday. And
that's right.
we did phone conversations with all our teammates, the ones we played. So you're talking about maybe 60, 40 athletes on the phone. We talking like it was yesterday.
all the things we did in the dorm and on the road trips and in the games. Basketball, man, I mean, it's a fraternity.
You know, I'm glad you said that, absolutely. You know, people say, you know, when I get all around the guys who play football, I just get around, just keep talking about what you did a long time, just keep talking about football. They, people don't understand, it's that camaraderie, it's that thing where you just reminisce and you talk. I mean, yeah, you can move on and talk about other things, but if you get a bunch of basketball players around, whether they are young or old, and y'all get in a circle, you know what you're going to talk about. You might talk about something, but you're going to talk about basketball. And that's
it's a little different in today's kid because they do so much social media, so they don't intermingle with each other like yesteryear's athletes did. You know, even the guys in the 60s and 70s, they were even on a different level because on they taught us on our road trips, we did the spades, we did the whists, we did all those other little things that we did that built a camaraderie with amongst us as that made us family. We did family things together.
Yeah.
So today's athlete, they don't do the same thing because they're on social media so much and on their phones, they don't build the camaraderie that we had. And that's probably why you got the issue that the Lakers had because the older guys see it as it's a fraternity amongst the players, but they don't hold the same standard that we held because we did all the stuff that we did as a family.
Thank you. You know something? I'm glad you said that because I remember a time in a locker room, everything stayed in there. You would never hear anybody coming out talking about another player or seeing another player's wife. I mean, it wouldn't even come up. Like if you saw somebody's wife, she looked good, you look at it, wouldn't give it a second thought, and you go on to something else. It wouldn't be, man, she's bad or this and that. We never did that. It was a kind of respect. You never heard teammates snitching on teammates, even the ones that didn't like. They kept it knocking. Because if they found out you were snitching, you can find yourself in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. True. That's true.
Yeah. So I know exactly what you're talking about, man. You know, that locker room is supposed to be sacred.
Yeah.
Just like arenas and my man, they come in there with a gun and all that. Man, that kind of stuff would never happen.
Nah, because in yesteryear, we were family. So why would you bring a gun in for your brother? We were talking
about.
You know, we might grab each other. We never threw punches at each other.
You know what? That never happened to me when I was playing ball. Football, you'd get a little tussle, but just throwing punches or in the locker room, stealing each other in the face, all that kind of stuff. Man,
no.
I've never been a part of that.
No, I can never say. It just changed over the years. It's a big difference.
And even when I played football, I had a lot of people that I played against. They hated me. They really did hate me. They hate me, right? And I'm not gonna hide it. But after the game was over, I didn't have anybody stalking me up down the street want to kill me. But these guys, man, they you know, it's just another ball game.
Yes, true.
But Keno, let me say this, man. Tell us about Oxon Hill before you go. Tell us about Oxon Hill.
Oh man. I got the off-field job. I got a call that they needed an emergency coach. So a friend of mine who's the AD, she told me to come interview for the job. Went out to the interview. I wanted to stay in D.C., but I interviewed for the job in McKinley, and I didn't get it because the former AD Crumpton gave it to a friend of his. But I wanted to just keep my services in D.C.
Yeah.
When I did the interview at Oxon Hill, they showed me so much respect as if I was like immersed. They was like, we don't really have to interview you. They just gave me the job, looking at my resume and seeing what I had done. And as a school teacher, I was well respected. So,
yeah, absolutely. Oh, man,
my first year, I took in the team. I got the job, and the season started December 3rd. I got the job maybe. They gave it to me in October.
Yeah.
We were like five. You know what? And this may sound crazy,
we went, and it's funny because we all we haven't decided. I'm looking at the record. I thought our record was 5-15, but my players said we were 4-16. So we either won 4 games year before last or 5 games. So, but this year, and you know what? Probably one of the greatest teams I have ever coached. I took a picture with them kids. I put my record, and it's in my office. The greatest team, one of the top 3 greatest teams I ever coached. Those kids lost game after game after game. And it was, we weren't off by a lot. It was like we always were there until the fourth quarter. It was just, we were small. My biggest guy was 6'3". And we were playing against guys 6'9", 6'10", 6'8". And we got beat on the backboard. So when the game got close, when they were missing shots and we needed a rebound to kind of close the game or get it closer, we couldn't get a rebound. So
I remember you telling me about that.
And those kids, to the testament of those kids, they came to they never missed a practice. And every practice was upbeat. And every time I talked to them, it was yes, sir, no, sir.
You know that that's coaching too. You demand respect.
And then this year we went 20. We lost in the final four to go to championship. In the final four, we lost to go to championship. We finished 20-7 this year.
Well, you know what? That's amazing because you turned the program around, and Jeffries from Dunbar went over there and turned the football program around. Because that was terrible. I mean, that school was down in the dumps.
Yeah. Oh, great coach there. That's one of my biggest supporters. Man, love that guy. And he's at all my games. Anytime I play a game, if he doesn't have something going on football, he's at my game.
He's a tremendous human being. He's a great coach.
Oh, no doubt. Yes,
he sent a lot of guys to the pro. Jeffries, I had him on the show earlier, about a couple of months earlier. And, man, you know, he was telling me a lot of different things that I didn't know. That's one thing why I like about this show, having people – DMV, because I know a lot of y'all. Like, I've been knowing you for years, but you just told me some things I didn't know. And that's what it's all about. There's so much talent around this area, but people take the time to do stories on them. Like Cornelius Green had to deal with the Ku Klux Klan when he went to Ohio State. You know, Steve Savoy went to Utah. It's a lot of Lonnie Perrin. He had to go to Illinois in that cold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's so many stories right here in the DMV, and they need to be told. You know,
yes.
So, man, you family, you know, I love you. I appreciate you for coming on the show, man. And you know, I'm going to have you back.
I appreciate it.
You and I will talk. Good luck. We argue about football. And by the way, stick to basketball and stop trying to act like you know football. I guess so. We get in heated arguments and people say, do y'all like each other? I say, you must be crazy. I ain't going to never let no football come between me and my man.
Yeah, exactly.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. Yes, indeed.
So much.
Appreciate you.
Thank
Thanks
you, man.
I
appreciate you guys.
Okay.
All right.
Take it easy.
Okay.
So I got your boy on
here. Hang man. That's my main man. Look, let me tell you. This guy Elwood.
Hang man.
How you doing?
I'm fantastic, man. How about you, man?
This is Elwood?
This is me. This is Yango. Elwood Yango Sawyer. Come on, man.
Hey, look, let me say this. Let me say this before you start. This is a man, Bach, that I really respect. This man is out in the community. He's trying to make a difference with prison reform, prisoners coming home, getting a job, you know, trying to get them out of jail because some of them just be realistic. They don't belong in the feds right now. And with the youth, he's always involved in you know, Ward 8, Ward 7, you know, trying to make things better. I mean, he's a man that does a lot for people. Just like my man, Al Malik Farrakhan, you know, Rico.
That's right.
There's only a few people I respect, right? And Yango is one of the ones that I really respect, you know. He's had a journey. He's been through a lot. But he's a straight-up street soldier, somebody I respect. And guess what? tell you the truth, it ain't. I respect a whole lot of people, but it's only a very few that's going to really go out in the streets. You know, a lot of people talk, but they're not going to go out in the street and make a difference.
Yeah,
Yango, I want to welcome you to the show, man.
Welcome. Let me
say this, man. I'm honored, man. I'm honored to be on this show, and I'm honored for you to say the things that you say. That you just said about him, because I have the utmost respect for you, man. I remember we used to be in the same circle, and you'd be sitting back observing and dropping pearls of wisdom to change the minds and thinking of the youth that we were working with. And so, you know, my respect level for you, man, is beyond description in terms of trying to find words that could describe it, man. I have the utmost respect for you. I know the work that you've done. I saw the work that you've done. I see the work that you do through the radio station. And when I talk about that, I'm talking about this process of healing that needs to take place in our community. Your radio show is a part of the healing process. You know, you just like a Mo Better Man, a Petey Green, a Carl Nelson, a Joe Madison, a Mark Thompson, you know, folks, man, who are part of the healing process through the media. And what a brother like Al Malik Falcon and Ronald Moten and myself and a number of other brothers, you know, we what we call foot soldiers. We in the trenches.
Absolutely.
You know, but the key to dealing with violence, Hangman, is to change the way our community thinks.
Absolutely.
I don't care how many jobs you get, how many training programs, it don't matter if the thinking is the same. There was a brother by the name of Dr. Thurman Evans who used to be the chairperson, man, of the school board here in Washington, D.C. He said if you change the minds, you can change the time, which means, man, if you can change thinking, you can deal with violence in our community, and we have to start real early. We just can't wait till a young brother or sister get to be 17 or 18 to talk about changing the way they're thinking. We have to start, man, when children are 1 and 2 and 3 years old and begin to put positive kind of information in them so that their self-esteem level will always be high. And what
we
find today, man, that a lot of our brothers and sisters, man, like 17, self-esteem level, man, is real, real low. They think
it's horrible,
everything,
man,
in life,
right,
a lot of times, is just getting high.
Yes, you're right. You're right. And society, you know, and I don't mind saying the white society, they play games with us and our people, man. We don't try to read and understand and find out what's going on. We just believe so much crap. It don't make
any
sense, man. You know, in this town, we let it get this way because we only had a few people that would stand up. You know, it's a shame they ran us out of the city. You know, you hurt yourself, right? And then just because you get a guy and you elect him and he's, he's a politician, that don't mean that he's going to be for black folks because he's black. You know, you never know, right? And you know, I've dealt with so much violence and street murders and stuff like that. That's all I dealt with, right? You know, I've got between people that's going to shoot each other. I risk my life. But you know what the thing about it, Yango? You know what? When you start naming the people that's really going to go out in them streets 12 or 1 o'clock at night and go back up in them cuts, the list is real short. It's a real short list. But we got a lot of people behind the scenes to do a lot of talking. We should do this and we should do that. But when it gets dark, you go in with your family. And I'm out in the street. I'm out in the street. Malik, me and Malik used to roll. We were down Barry Farm one time. We had a meeting, and we said we're going to – Barry Farm, they were stealing cars, and Reverend Miley and myself. It's about 25 of us. Malik said, hey, man, let's go down Barry Farm right now.
Right.
I'm with
you.
And guess what?
You know –
three of us. You know what the rest of them did? They didn't move out the seat.
Well, you know, Hangman, what I found, man, and, you know, you mentioned earlier, man, like, you know, some of the trials and tribulations, man, I went through. I did almost 35 years in prison. I'm a recovering addict, man. I've been clean 17 years. You know, I come out of the streets. I found my mind in prison, you know. And so I, when I found my mind, I began to change the way I was thinking. That's why I know that if you change the way you're thinking,
thank you,
if we can change the thinking of our community, then we will be successful in terms of whatever we attempt to do to make our community better. You
absolutely.
Know, and so you know, it's like when you're not working, man, you see a whole lot of youngsters, I'm almost certain, that remember you. And come up to you and say, you know what, Mr. Brooks or Mr. Hangman, man, I'm so glad you told me so-and-so. I didn't understand it then, but I understand it crystal clear now. And this is what I'm doing. And they're proud to let you know the progress they're making, which
yeah.
means, man, that the influence you had in their lives reciprocated into the community. That's why a guy like you and a number of other brothers, man, is needed to begin to make a difference in our community in terms of changing the thinking in our community. Now, once we begin to change thinking, we begin to find out, man, what do you want to do?
That's
so
right.
One of them youngsters say, man, I want to go to barber school. Okay. That should be available to them. One of them might say, well, man, I want to go to college. That should be available to them. One of them might say, well, man, I want to get my high school diploma. That should be available to them.
That's
once
right.
we begin to make a difference in our community in terms of changing things in our community, then programs, access to them programs should be available so that these young brothers and sisters, man, can develop careers. We ain't talking about a workforce development program where we put a kid in the street picking up trash and
yeah, that's right. That ain't
and
a
got
job.
No job.
At McDonald's. We're going to get your job at McDonald's. That's not a career.
That's right. So, you know, we talk about career, Brother Hangman. You know, we talk about a program like a guy like Raymond Bell got, man, Hope Project. Raymond
yeah.
is getting youngsters jobs, man, making $40,000 and $50,000 a year. That's 18 and 19 years old. That's a career. That takes a kid out of the street. It allows a kid to take care of his family. If he got children, it allows him to take care of him. He can see a future. If you're
that's right.
providing opportunities in terms of careers, a youngster yeah. can't see a future. That means, man, he don't want to change the way he's thinking. Only yeah. thing he knows is how he's thinking now. And you can see it, man, if you walk past these corners. I think one of the worst things that could have happened, you know, in terms of the mentality of our community, not in terms of eliminating penalties, it's for the legalization of marijuana. Everywhere I go, somebody is smoking marijuana. And I'm not talking
yeah.
about old heads. I'm talking about youngsters.
Yeah, you're absolutely
you
right.
Know?
You're absolutely right. You know, hey, guess what? You know what? You know, we just saying the man is adding more stuff. Say, oh, go ahead and do that. That's how they break us down. That's how they break
yeah.
us down. And then you got a lot of guys, you know, they're breaking us down completely. And you know what I found out? A lot of people are scared. They talk that crap, but they're scared to walk up to them youngers and talk. First of all,
no
you want to be a real man and soldier, you can't be afraid of them youngers. If you're afraid,
man.
You can't help anybody.
I agree, man. Let me tell you this here also. And just to verify what you're saying, Hangman, we come up in a community. Watch these youngsters growing up, you know, on their way to school. How's your grandmother doing, man? How's your mother doing?
That's
is
right.
everybody all right?
Next
yes, they are Mr.
Yes.
Gango. Yes, they are Mr. Hangman. But as yes. they get older, we stop speaking to them.
That's
now
right.
We become afraid of them. And what happens is, man, a lot of times they hold our communities hostage. And
that's right.
The thing I found, and I'm almost certain you have too, man, a lot of times, man, all these young brothers and sisters want to do, man, I want is somebody to reach out to them.
That's right.
Give them a hug and say, man, how you feeling today, man? How's things going with you? Man, don't do that. If you do that, man, the consequence might be more than you can bear.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think, man, that we have to always remind young brothers and sisters, because we got a lot of sisters hanging on corners also, the consequence of their action. And I'll give you some examples, Hangman. Little 16-year-old sister killed the girl, 18 years old, man, right down from Bennington.
Yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, I heard about that.
And so she pregnant with a baby and had one about 6 months old.
Yeah.
She had, first thing she said, well, when this little girl bumped into her, they had been beefing up in Bennington, she said, I'm going to kill this bee today.
Yeah, and they mean it. They mean it, too.
And so that's what she did. Do you think this young sister knew the concept? Do you think she knew that she could spend the rest of her life in jail?
No, because they're mind
of that particular act.
Their mind is very tender, and they don't realize what they're getting themselves in. They figure, oh, I can do that. See, one thing about young people, they always believe they can get away with something. They always believe justice ain't going to be too hard or I'm not going to be too swift. But they don't realize they're putting them under the jail.
No question, man. Hey, man, I just talked to a guy today whose son been locked up 40 years and went to jail out in Maryland at the age of 16.
Yeah.
They won't let him out for killing another youngster. At 16 years old, he'd been in 40 years. And so it's the same thing can happen for every act that these youngsters commit in Washington, D.C., not understanding the consequence.
That's
example,
right.
The youngster who killed both of them youngsters that killed them kids over on Deanwood Station.
Yeah.
You know, if we would have been reinforcing consequence, man, I mean, you know, talk to the whole group of it. There should be people going into the schools, talking to young people, man, going out on the corner, talking to young, say, man, if you do this here, this is what's going to happen to you. If you do this here, this is what's going to happen to you. But if you don't do this, and if you do this, this is the benefits, man, of doing this right here. So we got to show them the difference in right and wrong.
You're
right.
We
got to make them think about it because a lot of times they may have an idea of right and wrong, but they don't think about it. And so it's our responsibility to get them to think about it.
Yeah, because let me tell you, you don't think the same way at 16 as you do 25, at 25, 35, at 45. So if you can get a little age on you, you can make a difference. But at 16 years old, you know, especially a lot of them haven't had any upbringing. Nobody has ever really explained something to them. They learn a lot of stuff from the streets. But you know what I've always said, and this is my saying, this is the biggest saying I got. The best way to get to know a troublemaker is when he's not in trouble.
That's right.
You can't wait till he get in trouble. And all
say that again.
You should have done that.
Say that again, Hangman.
The best way to get to know a troublemaker is when he's not in trouble.
That's right, man. That's
what
I like that.
The best way to get to know a cold-blooded, cold-blooded stick-up boys or gorillas in the street. The best time to get to know a stick-up man is when he ain't sticking nobody up.
That's right. That's right.
That's
that
what
makes,
you can say to him in between.
That makes all the sense in the world.
But if you're
that's
scared
right.
to talk to him, and I tell you something, you tell me if I'm right. You can walk up to a young person, and they can tell if you real. That's one thing about that instinct. You know, they're different from us. You know, they don't have any loyalty or whatever. But you walk up to them younger, they can tell if you are afraid or you are just jiving. They can tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Hangman, when we talk about solutions to violence that's taking place in our community, first thing we tell folks, man, that each one of us have to become a healer. That we
that's
have
right.
to begin to set up healing zones in our community. Like, for an example, your show is a healing show.
Yeah.
You are a part of the healing process. You are a healer. All the information you give out is about healing, even though you may not use the word healing, you may not talk about healing, folks, but the information you give out is about changing thinking, changing minds, bringing folks on, man, who have excelled in sports, to let people know, hey, man, everybody can't excel in sports.
That's
everybody
right.
can't do it, but you possibly can do this right here. This is a part of the healing process. You are a healer. So we have to begin to talk about how we can heal our community. So one of the things that we say is that we have to establish healing zones. We have to begin to talk about and deal with the mental health issues in our community.
Oh, my God.
A lot of our people, Hangman, are traumatized, man.
Right.
Hangman, you and I walking down the street and you see a guy come up and kill me. What kind of effect that's going to have on you? Even at 40 and 50. So what kind of effect do you think it's going to have on a kid that might be 16 or 17 years old to lose his best friend?
For nothing.
That he was walking with 10 minutes ago, but 15 minutes later he's dead. That's traumatized. And then the kid is not able to express it. He's not able to express his feelings because murder in some parts of our community is a normal thing. Shooting in some parts of our community is a normal thing. You know, we have to begin to talk about healing zones. We have to begin to talk about mental health centers in our community. And we have to talk about how we can begin to change the thinking of our young people, some old heads also, and begin to promote love and unity in our community.
And you know, I'm blessed. I'm 67 years old, and if things go well in June, I'll be back in the district government. I'll be back in the streets because I'm 67 years old. I got my health. I'm blessed. So I'm going to go in the street. They go, well, you're too old to go in the street. Too old to go in the street. That's who needs to go in the street.
Hey,
somebody
needs to Hangman, you, my Alma League Falcon, a number of other old heads, Tyrone Park, Rico Rush,
you
committed to the last breath, man.
That's right.
I look at a whole week, man. We've been demonstrating outside of this building called World Vision about the fire of this young black sister. Dick Gregory was with us all 5 days. He's 85 years old.
Yeah. And man, guess what? If you don't respect him, there's something wrong.
That's right.
He's a soldier for real. He's been in the trenches for a long time.
So, Hangman, I just say that, Hangman. Man, think you're old.
That's
Clay say this here. He say that age is mind over matter. If
you're
don't mind, it don't matter.
That's right. Such a pain.
You know.
Hey, don't look back because they might be gaining on you.
That's right.
You're right. But you know something?
And then I tell you something else too, Hangman. A lot of times, man, the first thing, like one example, somebody interviewed, the first thing they want to know is your age. How old are you? I tell them I'm ageless. I'm ageless because I understand this here, man, that I'm a spirit and a part of God. And the spirit is ageless. So when you begin to talk about when a man asks you your age and you say, well, I'm 60-something. And somebody read that, they say, oh, man, she's 60-something years old. What can you tell me?
You're right. Guess what I tell people? They say, well, how old are you? I say, I'm so old my birthday fell off the calendar. See, I got some slick to tell them. But you know something? That's one reason why I like the Nation of Islam. Because you know what? That's one of the few organizations that nobody infiltrated that, right? And them guys, man, I feel comfortable. Now, I'm a Christian, but let me tell you, I'm not stuck in one religion, so this is the way I'm going to do it. Man, whoever's telling the truth. And, you know, Louis Farrakhan, I'm telling you, the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, he tells the truth. Now, if you know anything about history, if you read books and you understand, you know he's telling the truth. Now, if you've never heard it before, that means you ain't been reading.
That's right. And you know what, Hangman, one of the ingredients, man, that we have to put in our presentation to young people is their greatness. We have to tell them, we have to teach them about how great they are. Because once they begin to find out their greatness, then they will begin to understand that you're great also. And they will begin to value you because now they begin to value them. One of the things that Brother Malcolm X said was great. One of the greatest sins has been committed on us as a people. We were taught to hate ourselves, and as a result of hating ourselves, we hate everything that looked like us. And so we begin to do with this self-hate, we begin to put everything on everybody else
That's right.
Instead of putting it where it belongs. See, because once we begin to put it where we belong, we can understand what's happening with us and, again, begin to change the way that we are thinking.
You're absolutely right.
Young, you know, a lot of kids, 30 years old, man, they don't know how great the work that Dr. Martin Luther King did, or guy like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, or Malcolm X, or Stokely Carmichael, you know, some of them other folks, man, that made a difference. You know, they look now at the guy who made a difference was T-Pain, the rapper.
You understand
what I'm saying? These are their role models, man. Well, our role models was individuals who were straight up stand up men. I mean, even some folks come out of our community, like a guy that might come out of my community was like Zach Cotton Bryant.
Yeah.
Cuball. You know, Linwood Gray. You know,
Linwood Gray, that
would stand up, even though they were hustlers, but they would stand up and they
like
put my to the community.
Like you were Cornell the other day. I saw the picture of you. Cornell, my man.
Cornell Jones, hey, stand up guy, man, and do anything to make the community better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, our era of time, man, we had men that we could look up to. I tell you something else, man. They would not allow you and I to stand on the corner with them.
That's right.
Well, what are you doing out here on this corner?
Right.
Why are you not in school?
That's right.
Now, guys would let them youngsters stand on the corner with them, young girls and young guys, and pass the joint to them.
That's
pass
right.
And
pass right.
to them, you know. But and then when we were coming up, it didn't happen, man. You could not stand on that corner, man. Man, get your butt to school, boy.
And you know something else? Best friends never killed each other back then. You never had he making more money. Best friends killing each other. And here's another thing. If I got a girlfriend and we broke up, you wouldn't talk to her. You, my man, you wouldn't talk to her. That was
taboo.
And taboo. She wouldn't talk to you, and you wouldn't talk to her.
That's right. That's
right.
But see, now, man, somebody said, man, that the shame and disappointment has been misplaced.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And so now when we talk about the shame and disappointment has been misplaced, we talk about, man, that has took the place of some stuff, man, that should be good. And thinking about how we can make our community better.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know the thing. But let me say this. I'm gonna tell you something. The biggest problem I got is we got a lot of black males and females, older people who live in Washington, grew up in Washington. But you know what? We have so much stuff going on in D.C. But you know the biggest problem is, we just got a few people in the streets. And we got, you know what I always say? We got 100 people in the street and 200,000 behind the scenes. And when they come to me, they got more mouth than anybody else. You know,
I told
them one time, you know, I used to go play Terry Lincoln. I used to up in the cut. When them youngers back up in the cut, they got guns, shotguns, and they be shooting crap or searching quarters. I go different places and go up in there. And I'm going in there. I say, man, y'all got them guns out here. Y'all so-and-so. And they say, yeah, you right, Brooks. You right. I say, you got kids walking back and forth. See, you right. But guess what? Somebody had to go up there and say that. But, you know, you got a lot of people, adults, that grew up in this town. They won't go in those neighborhoods at night. And you know what? If we don't have more people in the streets to make a difference, it's going to be hard. Because guess what? You know, it's 100,000 youngins out there. 100,000 of them, they are everywhere. And then we got 50 soldiers in the street.
Uh-huh.
Because you're afraid. But the thing that kills me is when we go to meetings, they know everything. They can tell you all kind of plans.
Hangman, no question, man. There should be at least, everywhere them youngsters are hanging out, there should be at least 4 or 5 soldiers who are healers. With information, listen, man. How you doing today, man? Because if they see you, what happens is, man, you get what we call a license to operate.
That's right.
And a license to operate means that the youngster now accept you in their community.
That's right.
And so everywhere they're hanging out at, there needs to be three or four individuals who have established rapport with them and say, man, listen, man, this is what we got happening. Come on,
it'd
man,
out
give yourself a chance. If you don't like
it,
you can always come back to the street.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, so I mean, you know, that's what needs to take place, man. If we, and then, see, especially, man, if they know you've been in, or if they know, man, you are a no-nonsense type of guy like you. And I keep talking about the youngsters who encounter you today that you worked with yesterday.
That's right.
Have utmost respect for you. When they see you, some of them will probably run to you because
yes,
they
you
know that you had their best interest and you are no-nonsense type of person.
That's right.
You know, and so that means, man, that you have made a difference. And so what happened is a kid would be with another kid and say, yeah, man, that's Mr. Hangman, man. He helped me, man. He helped get me a job. He helped me stay in school. I just wouldn't listen to him, but I'm beginning to hear what he told me yesterday now.
You know
so that's the significance, man, of having strong men and women in the community making a difference who are healers. Out where individuals, man, think it's all right to hang on a corner from 7 o'clock in the morning to 7 o'clock at night. As Brother Malcolm
yeah.
would say, can't see in the morning, you can't see at night.
That's right. But you know something? Let me tell you something. I got some students, because I work in the school system and recreation for 37 years. I got some students, they're in their 50s. I mean, I'm 60, they like 57, 58, because I was just a little older than them. And, you know, they come to me all the time and say, "Don't you help me? You remember you said this? You remember that?" I don't remember. I don't remember what I said. You know,
right.
One guy, Dickie Wells' son, he got stabbed, and I saved his life when he got stabbed. You know, I put the pressure on the wound and all this and stopped the bleeding till the ambulance got there. I don't even remember it. I don't remember. He told me. I don't remember. You know, I've seen time when there were two guys, cousins, get ready to shoot each other. I ain't going to tell you the name, but I got between them, and they had guns. And they said, you better move out of the way, because they're going to kill each other over a girl, two cousins, right? I tell people this all the time. I talk them out of it, right? But when I got in my car, I urinated in my pants. I'm not going to tell no lie, because I didn't realize
what I man, you know what? It's no telling how many murders you may have prevented.
Oh, we had the gang task force,
because a lot of times, Hangman, we were talking about this earlier. A lot of times, man, people do not think of the consequence.
They don't.
They act. I got
they
some
don't.
Buddies, man, that's in jail, man. I mean, been in jail 40 years, man, 35 years. That made a bad decision. As a result of the bad decision they made, they've been in jail 30 or 40 years. Do you think if they had an opportunity to make that decision again, they would make the same decision?
Oh.
They would think about it before they made it. And so that's why I say, man, it's no telling how many murders you may have prevented in the work you were doing and still do by just telling a kid, man, you don't want to do that.
You're right.
So something say within this kid's mind, why did he say that? You know, and then you might say, man, you're going to jail, man, if you do that. So now you understand me. He is hearing some other stuff. Going to jail. I don't want to go to jail. Okay, man, and move on. You understand what I'm saying? That is part of the conversation that I talked about earlier, man, when we talk about healing.
You know something?
And what you do and what other folks do in terms of this healing process, but don't even call themselves healers.
Well, you know what, man? I appreciate that. But let me tell you something. A lot of these decisions that these young people make, their egos and that peer pressure is so great. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, man.
I used to do presentation. I said, man, once you pick up that gun, you're going to use it. I don't want to hear them about you got a protection. No, you don't. You're going to use it. You're going to use that gun. And see, that if your boy get jumped, or your boy get in a fight and get beat up and come back, he gonna tell you he got punished, he got jumped. So you gonna get that pistol, you gonna go out, and guess what?
Yeah.
Those soon as you are shooting somebody, your man gonna snitch. Cause one thing about them youngins, they will tell. They sing like birds. They will tell. And not only that, I told a guy one time, I said, you can get a guy on the corner that's 21 years old and say, I'm gonna give you a job making $50,000 a year. Just give you a job making $50,000. You ain't gotta do nothing. He go to the go-go that night with his girlfriend, and no sooner does a dude call him a so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so, he forget all about that job because my boy's watching, and I can't
let
him disrespect me.
That's right. That's right. But, hey, man, what about the little sisters, man? You know, one of the things I found, man, about the young ladies, most of them cut knives.
Yeah, they
and
do.
They say that the young ladies are more dangerous than the guys.
They are.
Because the young ladies want to leave a scar.
That's right.
Folks know they've been there. That's why they carry knives.
They all of them are hot tempered. You know, that hip hop thing. And the thing that I don't blame everything on TV because all they got to do is go out the street and they see it. But every time you see a sitcom, you got black women arguing with each other, pulling each other's hair and all this and that. And I'm not saying so much like it's a TV, but that culture, that hip hop culture, everything is women cursing and jumping on men and jumping on guys. And the thing about it is, man, when we were growing up, we ain't never beat on no women like they beat on girls now. They be beating on a girl.
Yeah.
These guys are so out of control, man.
I tell you something else, Hangman. I tell young ladies that when they encourage their son, a young daughter, to hit a young girl or a young girl to hit a young guy, that is the beginning of domestic violence.
That's what it is.
Now they believe it's all right to hit each other. You know, and then they hit each other, and 5 minutes later, man, they make up like ain't nothing happened. They think that's a part of the relationship.
Yeah. But you got a lot of mothers telling the kids, you go out there and fight her. You go out there, aunts, you go out there and fight her. Seems like everybody got a crazy aunt in the family. We broke up a big gang fight between Luscious Honeys and Most Wanted years ago at Johnson Junior High School. Aunts jumping out of the car, everybody fight. Bridget and I in the middle of, believe it or not, her and I, we stopped that whole thing, two of us. People standing on the front, the teachers, they looking at it, right? Now, we could have got stabbed or something like that, but guess what? If you're going to try to make a difference, man, you got to step to the curb. You got to step to them young.
That's
you can't
right.
be saying, I ain't going to get hurt. I'm not going out there, you know?
That's right.
That's what you said all the time. Yango, your face will say soldier. That's what a soldier
man,
is.
I tell folks this here, man. Our community, our responsibility. That we have a responsibility to our community. But one of the things I learned, man, that there's a whole concept, you know, when you see something beginning to take place called stop, you know, which means, man, that you stop, you think, you observe, and then you plan in terms of what your next move of action is. And that keeps you out of harm's way. You know, and a lot of times, man, we have to deal with the conversation from a distance.
Thank you.
You know, until we can calm the issue down.
No, that's right.
We got to thinking.
We got to listen. You know? You're right. You know what?
Yeah.
When I had the gang task force, we used to do mediations. I didn't want any adults in the media. It was just us and the two groups, right, or me and the two groups. And they jump up. I said, you can't jump up in a fight. I ain't having that. They would argue back and forth. They would curse. They would threaten each other. I let them sit there and argue. As long as they don't jump in a fight, the more they argue, the more they talk, the more I find out what really happened.
That's right.
But when you tell everybody, be quiet, don't you say nothing. If you say something, you say, you know, let me tell you something. Arguing back and forth, you find out a whole lot of stuff. He said,
well,
she said, girl playing a guy. It's so much crazy stuff, man.
I agree, but you know, I think back the way you talking about how peer pressure is, and I normally, man, tell parents that the influence of the street is more greater than the influence of the community and you.
Absolutely.
You know. And I just think about, man, when I used to work with the kids at DYS, that them kids come down there on Thursday and give up urine from all over the city.
Yeah.
All of them knew each other. All of them would speak to each other.
That's right.
Wouldn't be near fight down there.
Yeah.
But once they got back into the wherever they lived at, the attitude
Influence.
Was completely different.
Influence. You're
so
right.
Again, you know, we talk about the peer pressure that you're talking about and the pressure of the street. Man, where you know that Joker from? You know, man, he don't live over here. He don't live around here.
That's
you
right.
Know, man, you keep on speaking to him. I mean, you know, man, so now the attitude has changed where we live at. But on Thursday, there's a different attitude.
That's right. That's
you
right.
Know, all of us were locked up together, et cetera.
That's right. And you know what? I tell people all the time, when they were lording and they was fighting each other, they went to why. But when they go to the fed joint, DC be sticking together. They be deep, too.
Oh, you better?
Yeah, they deep.
You better,
you know,
man. I was at some joints, Hangman. It wasn't no more than 15 of us in a population of 1,200.
That's right.
And primarily everybody in the joint was against DC guys.
Everybody hate D.C., the guards. I tell people all the time, D.C., probably the most hated in the penitentiary. They've known to be ruthless and cutthroats, but D.C., per capita, you know, we probably got the largest population, you know. And
yeah, man.
D.C.
Yeah.
has got a reputation. The Baltimore guys want to run behind D.C. You know, I remember my man, so guy working at Fred George, say, guy said, I'm from D.C., he said, you ain't from D.C. He said, well, I'm really from Baltimore. He said, I can tell D.C. guy, right? You know, so the thing about it is, man, it's so many of them, and I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get a lot of people out of jail that don't belong there. We're trying to get a lot of these. But these guys, man, 40, 50 years old, you think they're going to come out and commit crime? They know the game is over. They waste time keeping these people in prison.
Well, you know, like, Hangman, we do a presentation every 90 days, man, to 17 different joints around the country. Guys getting ready to come home, man. And what I'm telling you is the same thing I tell them. I tell them, man, I say, man, listen, when you come home, man, you got to come home with a different mindset.
Thank you.
You know, you got to shut the door of incarceration. You know, you got to begin to think new thoughts. And you got to begin to think, man, that I'm not going to let my number define me. I'm going to define my number, which means, man, that you take the advantage of any situation in jail that's going to enhance your quality of life so it will prepare you to come home.
You
and when
absolutely.
You come home, man, don't go to the street, come to the community. And I break down the difference between the street and the community.
See, that's what I'm talking about.
And I told a buddy of mine today, man, because, you know, I see a lot of my buddies, man, that just come home, man, on 8th and 8th Northeast. You know what I mean? Off of Division Avenue. You know, because those are the last strongholds.
That's right.
For folks, man, who are using, you know, place, man, where folks can hang out where their friends are hanging out at. And I say, man, what we have to do is encourage some folks to put some things together so that more opportunities will be available than the opportunity to go come and stand on 8th and 8th Street Northeast all day long.
You've been doing that, Elwood. I mean, you do remarkable work trying to re-entry program. I mean, it's amazing because guess what? I mean, they lost souls. A lot of them come out. They really good people. They don't want to do anything, but they just don't know where to turn because, you know, that's why you need people talking to them. Let me tell you something. I played football. I dealt with a lot of football players. But, you know, when I was going to Cadoza, I used to hang with the stick-up crew. I mean, the only thing that saved me was football. My father, you know, I was scared of death. My father and Bob Head, my football coach. But guess what? You got guys that are coming home now. They know the hustle game is over. They know them young and snitching. They know they can't get in that. But guess what?
That's
they still
right. Yeah.
Like you. They still need people like you to tell them, well, this is what's going on.
Well you know, Hangman, I live, one of the reasons why I live like I live today, man, is because I want to be an example for a guy coming home. you know, especially guys who knew me, you know,
yeah,
in the joint, because I was a fool. You know what I mean? And I had a little man's complex.
You had that respect.
And I was what they call a touch-all. You know, and so today I am what I call a power of example, just like a lot of number of other brothers. Like, again, man, Al-Malik Farrakhan.
Yeah, Al-Malik.
We're what we call powers of examples. Examples for other brothers who are coming home. And our example, man, has been successful. Because we got a brother who just come home, man. Chip Henry did 35 years, doing real well. We got a couple other brothers, another friend of mine named Blunt Bay just come home, man, doing 25 years, doing
yeah,
real well, and a number of other brothers. So our example, along with brothers like Stu Anderson and Earl Weaver, Smooth, you know,
yeah,
these are guys that did big bits that have put together organizations, man, to help guys coming home, again, who are an example. So we have a core group of individuals, man, who've been incarcerated, who now are examples for men coming out of prison. And we got some sisters who are examples also, such a by the name of Terry Johnson.
That's right.
Elridge Day, you know, sister did 18 years and some other sisters, man, who did a big time. Brother by the name of Norman Brown.
You
know Norman?
But, yeah, you know what? My boy did about 40 years. Robert Price.
Hey,
Google,
the president did about 40 years. The president gave him a community sentence, give him clemency.
Okay.
And he, you know, he's home now. So, you know, he's doing great things. So we got examples, man, of brothers who came home, man, and who turned their lives around, power of example, changed the way they were thinking, and now, man, are making a difference in our community. And it's guys that's been in joint that's coming home gonna make a difference along with brothers like you. You know, that's why, again, I say, man, that it don't matter how old you are, man. You know what I mean? There is not a age gap. There is a communications gap.
That's right.
You've got to be able to communicate with these youngsters, man, and with some old-timers also.
Hey, man, let me tell you something. I tell people all the time, you know, a lot of people say, how can I do this? Oh, yeah, you can, but guess what? It's something in your heart. You got to understand when you go out and talk to them guys, you can't be afraid, and you got to be able to tell them something they need to hear.
That's
just
right,
sitting there telling them something. You got to know. And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. I'm proud. You know what I tell people all the time? And I use the word nigga. I say I'm a street nigga. Straight up D.C. street nigga. Hey, that's what I am. Now, they can look at it and say, we don't want to use that word. Okay, we don't want to use that word. But guess what? I'm straight up street. You know, I'm a ball player. I'm an athlete, but I'm straight up street. You know,
that's right.
I had a mother and father, but I wasn't sheltered. I was in the streets. I was a Cadoza. I was there, hung on 14th Street, 17th, 9th Street. So you know, and the thing about it, I'm proud that I have that because guess what? That helped me talk. When I'm talking to young people, that helped me. That's my resume.
That's right. Hey, but you know, Hangman. When we begin to talk about how we're going to make a difference, you know, and we do it, man, through example, we do it through using examples, and we do it through your radio show.
Yeah.
You know, folks listening, man, to this information, not only from me, but from you and from your other guests that you have, and they said, man, that sounds nice, man. Let me try that.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the process, man, of healing that we talk about, you know. And so, you know, man, we're going to change things. I don't know how long it might take, you know, but we're going to continue to work to make a difference in our community.
But let me tell you, I respect you. You've been under the weather. You had some issues, health issues, but you're still out there. You can say, oh, man, I ain't worried about that. I'm just going about my business. That's another reason why I respect you so much. You know, Malik was in the wheelchair. You know, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Louis Farrakhan laid hands on him. He got up and started walking. I mean, guess what? Hey, man, we got some guys out here that got some age on them. But guess what? Ailments, all that, We're still out there. That's why I respect you. You can go sit home and say, man, no thing about that no more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, man, it's like to the last breath. You know, we have to be committed, man. We look at I look at old timers, man. Look at the poker room. You know what I mean, man? Dick Gregory. You know, again, man, I repeat what Saxo Page say. He said, age is mind over matter. If you don't mind, it don't matter. And so it's got to be our attitude, you know what I mean, man, in terms of making a difference in our community.
Yeah.
It ain't an age gap. Again, it's a communication gap. If we're able to communicate.
You're right.
What we see is being the situation and how we can make a difference and how we can change the situation. That's what's significant, man. That's what's so important.
That's right.
You know,
but
that's what we have to begin to look at. We have to begin to think, see how we can change thinking, and continue the process of healing. That's it, man. You know, we got to be in it to heal our community.
You're right. And next week I'm gonna try to get Malik on. I've tried to get in touch with him. I'm gonna get Malik and I'm gonna get Rico in there because I'm gonna bring some people about the community. That's my next move because I'm bringing people from all over. But
right.
I want to tell you that I appreciate you being on the show, man. You know, we gotta go pay some bills, but
man, if I could just express how I felt, man, when you asked me to come on. You know, some things, man. You know, I mean. You know, when you have the utmost respect for a person because you know what they've done and you feel their character. You feel their vibrations, man, and they ask you to participate in something they're involved with. I mean, you know, it's beyond your imagination, man, in terms of what the feelings is, man. So, I mean, I can't express, man, how I felt, man, when you asked me to come on your show, man.
I appreciate you coming saying yes, too. I've been lucky. Nobody turned me down. I've been lucky.
Hey, man. No, man. Hey, man. I know nowhere in the world. Come on, man. Shoot. Turn you down? No, man. Not the hangman. You might have went to condole with my brother, man, Jeffrey Sawyer.
What did he grow?
Jeffrey could play that basketball, man.
I don't know. What year did he come out? I came out 68.
I don't forget, but you and Jeffrey are about the same age. That's
okay.
What I said. And he graduated from Cardozo.
Okay. I probably know about
Did you know Snipes?
Yeah, I know Snipes, yeah.
You know Snipes? Yeah, Snipes is a good friend of mine, a man of U Street.
Yes, Snipes. That's my man. Hey, you bringing back memories with old heads. Because Frey got killed. Frey was one of my boys. I used to hang with Frey up on Fifth and Kennedy when we were 19 years old.
Hey, man, did you coach the Cavaliers?
No, I coached the Metro Bulls, but I played with the DC Bears.
Okay, did you know John Vaughn?
Yeah, John Vaughn was my coach with the DC Bears.
Did you know Stump
Bailey? Yeah, Stump Bailey. All that. Look, we got to go right now. Because we get ready to run
man.
Out of time. But
hey, again, man, thank you, man, for having me on, man.
I'm gonna have you back on the show, man. We're gonna do a round table discussion. I'm gonna have you back on the show, man. We gotta get ready to go.
Man.
But I appreciate you coming on, man.
Peace and blessings. All right.
Love you, family. Way to go. My man. Talk to you.
Oh yeah, man, that was a great conversation.
You get so excited and wrapped up in stuff, you'd be running out of time.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But shoot, man, we might have to throw in a little small little healing segment on the show, man.
I think we need to do that.
Yeah, just a quick little piece, drop a, you know, couple jewels.
They can do that, man, and maybe have a round table discussion live.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think we put it together as fast as we can, too. What you think?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm with it, man. We will may have to make a couple little bit of adjustments, though, for Saturday. I'm leaving out of there. At 6, trying to get from Hyattsville to Shady Grove,
you're right.
I don't want to take my stuff in there though, because I got into
no,
a little,
you,
yeah.
Well, you need to be there. Everybody need to be there. Just making a difference.
Definitely.
And just like man, Yango, man, I had a lot of respect for him, man. He been in that. He been out, man. I mean, he was in the joint for a long time. He's making a difference. So.
Yeah, that's what it's about, man. You know, taking what you got and making it better in somebody else's life with what
I got some friends with the Nation of Islam. Man, they straight up soldiers, right? Hey, it's people I go to war with, man. You know, and they straight up soldiers. You ain't got to worry about them being infiltrated or somebody paying them off. You know, because it's about the community, man. We got these youngers, man. They need us. And when I start back working, I told them put me in the worst neighborhood you can find. I don't need to be in no neighborhood where I need to be in a neighborhood where they trying to hurt each other, so I can make a difference.
All right. That's the only
I can get shot, but man, you know, I can't sit around and say, I'm going out and make a difference. And that's what it's about. This subject really charged me up more than football. That's why I was really into it. We went over, Bob, but I mean, man, that's touching when you got a guy trying to, you know, help people, you know, help young people and guys coming home.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. That's what we need to be, you know. That's what we need to be doing, man. Helping each other, moving along, moving in the right direction.
But I appreciate Box. See, this, I mean, we gonna make some progress with this because a lot of people is picking up some steam, and I think we're gonna make some moves, and we're gonna make a difference. Talking to some people, man, we're gonna try to make a difference because, I mean, look at all the ball players that went through stuff. You know, the ball players we had that went through stuff. My man, Keno, 8 of them sleeping in the one bedroom apartment. I didn't know that. Bob Head sleeping in the kitchen. See, that's what these youngsters need to hear.
Right.
You know. Yeah.
That's where it is. I'd like to
take a shout out to your daughter. Glad she's getting better. Hanging in there. My family, my two daughters, my granddaughter, best friend. I mean, you know, we need all the support we can get because we got it's about the DMV, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it's about.
Forward.
You know, so.
Yeah.
I think it was great. So Yango and Keno, man, they really, they outdid themselves. That Yango is a special guy in the streets war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's up, man. So, yeah, I want to give a shout-out to my family, everybody, you know, who listened in. Oh, got to give a shout-out to my man, Big Dave. I know he out there listening. Yeah, man, it's all the people who, you know, keep supporting us and keep coming around. I definitely love hearing the conversation we had tonight, man, because it's really, you know, helping us. That'll help us really move forward with just the community.
We need to step up with a forum, man.
Yeah, I'm going to get the website going and get some people in there on there talking and sharing these ideas and making things happen. So. Y'all can check that out real soon. Let's Talk Football. It's your boy, Bach, Everything DMV Radio. We signing out.
Hangman signing out. Thanks.